Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Actual NBA basketball is in the books. John and I are going to talk a little bit about that, but then we're going to get into a mailbag. Thanks to everyone. Overwhelming response of questions for our solicitation on Twitter. So we're going to have a ton of stuff to talk about, hit on some rookie extensions, some trade ideas, all the other stuff that you want to talk about as we get into the opening night for 26 teams this evening. But first off, John, I talked about it a ton on Dunked On Prime, but just your overall thoughts on the two games last night.
Well, I mean, there was only one of them that we could really call a game, right? But that Laker-Clipper game was interesting to me because it's opening night and the Lakers look like they were on a back-to-back. Like they didn't, you just didn't feel their pace at all the way you did last year. And I just thought they looked kind of sluggish at times, especially obviously in the beginning of the game. But even then in the second half too, LeBron didn't really put his imprint on the game, which is something that I think we'll probably see a lot of in the regular season. Actually, it's one of the reasons I was kind of down on their regular season win total. Encouraging for the Clippers to see Paul George play so well after he struggled some in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I mean, that for him to be the best player on the floor last night, obviously it's not going to erase his playoff demons, but he did everything that he could do, at least for one night. And yeah, the Clippers, I'm sure, were a lot more motivated to win. Ring night is often a weird time for a lot of teams. They played 11 guys, 10 minutes or more, Frank Vogel did. So they have a lot of guys. They're just going to have to kind of figure out the rotations. And the Clippers, I mean, matched up better with the Lakers last year as well. I thought they largely had the better of those matchups, even though I think it was 2-2. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, yeah. I mean, to me, the most discouraging thing is we haven't seen the Lakers be able to score against the Clippers yet, really, in any of these matchups. And so that's a little bit of a concern. But, you know, for at least for one night, you are looking like more sage on the Lakers than I am when I was talking about them being the number one seed. But, you know, last year they lost game one to the Clippers and then they started 24-3. So I'm not ruling it out yet.
Exactly.
How about Brooklyn Golden State?
Well, Brooklyn looked awesome. I thought, you know, like KD looked good, but they didn't even need him to do that much. Like Kyrie was just killing them in the first half, just off the dribble, just kind of getting wherever he wanted. I thought LeVert looked pretty good in that six-man role. I thought Dinwiddie looks more comfortable than I expected in that starting group. And then it's almost unfair to have those weapons and then have Harris on the weak side, like coming off pin downs and stuff. Offensively, just Brooklyn, if healthy, just looks like they could be devastating.
Well, and they also held Golden State to a 77 offensive rating in the first half. Granted, Golden State had a lot of shots that were open that they missed.
Golden State missed a lot. Golden State held itself to a 77 offensive rating, partly, I think. The Nets did a good job on Steph, I thought, but yeah. Missed a lot of open jump shots, as you said. And I think shooting might be a story for that team all season. Neither Oubre nor Wiggins is a knockdown guy. The bigs aren't really shooters. That's going to be an interesting thing there as this year goes on. Does a team with Steph Curry have enough shooting? It's amazing to say that, but in this day and age, that's the type of thing we're left wondering.
So a lot of hype about James Wiseman, and he had 19 points in 24 minutes. Much of it came late with three jumpers in garbage time. It's good to hear Marv back on the call. But what are your impressions on his debut since he's a bit of a mystery man coming in?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see... how he got drafted so highly. I mean, on that first play of the game, you look at where he caught that ball and to turn it into a one step and a dunk. Like most players in the league can't do that. Most players need to take a power dribble, another step before they're even thinking about dunking on a catch like that. He caught the ball outside the paint and went up for a two-handed dunk. You see some potential with him to dribble drive from the free throw line area, sort of a la young Alonzo Mourning almost, and the way he would do that in Charlotte, back in the day reference there for our younger viewers. And yeah. The thing that I wondered a little bit watching him is it seems like he can't really do stuff with one hand. What I mean is he has to catch and go up with two hands to dunk it. He's even like his tip dunk tries are all with two hands. A couple of his drunk, like he had a dunk that rattled in. I wonder about that a little bit. Like it's really in contrast. You see DeAndre Jordan, the guy he was playing against, is able to go up with one hand, either hand, and just very confidently just catch the ball one hand and slam it. I don't know if Wiseman has those kind of hands.
Yeah, his hands looked a little bit dicey on some catches. I agree with like the one-handed dunks. He did go for the right-handed finish a couple times, including a right-handed hook shot, which he might want to excise.
Yes.
From the rope drop. But he had a nice one-handed finish on that fake DHO drive against Jeff Green. I mean, I think I talked about him very extensively with Danny last night, so I can kind of truncate this discussion. But I think the stuff that looked really good, which is the jump shot and his ability to dribble, that's kind of ancillary to me, at least in the short term. Like that stuff that like it's nice, but you know, do you really want him doing it that much? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, take an occasional trail three, that's fine. But you know, I still don't see him as a guy in the end that you're really going to be running stuff through. And so, yeah, certainly it's good that if you throw in the ball and they trap Steph, he can take a couple of dribbles, maybe get in for a dunk. But the feel, particularly defensively, you know, didn't really impress me. And yes, I'm well aware of the lack of experience and all that, but there was a possibility he was going to come in and look like he had some really good defensive instincts, at least, you know, and we just didn't see. I wanted to see some flashes in that regard and didn't quite see it, even though the physical tools obviously were really good. Listeners, I want to tell you about a new offering from Sports Business Classroom, an organization that I was involved in founding. And now they are launching the CBA Mastery Course, courtesy of the Cap Father himself, Larry Kuhn, who created the first CBA FAQ way back in 1999. Nobody knows more about the CBA than Larry Kuhn. And now, for the first time, you can learn the same information that Larry has been teaching teams, agents, and executives for over 20 years at your own pace, which is awesome. All the sexy stuff is in there. Uniform player contracts, exceptions, trades, extensions, waivers, the Gilbert Arenas provision. All of it's available via on-demand video. You can get interactive exercises you can do at your own pace. There's an exclusive members-only CBA Mastery Forum, definitions of all the key CBA terms, a certificate of completion if you complete the course. You can also be included in exclusive emails promoting jobs in the industry. You get a discount on Sports Business Classroom 2021 Business of Basketball Immersive Experience in Las Vegas, subject to admission, of course. And placement on the exclusive Vegas Summer League talent profile website, accessed exclusively by sports business executives looking for job candidates. If you sign up, you can receive 10% off the price of the CBA Mastery course using the discount code CAPSPACE if you're paying in full, or CAPSPACE PP if you're playing with a payment plan. Once again, that's the discount code CAPSPACE or CAPSPACE PP for CBA Mastery at CBAMastery.com. All right, well, let's get into now our mailbag questions. We had a ton of questions about rookie extensions, including from Haber Costa, Dialogic Mind. He asked best and worst rookie extensions. And one thing that we're going to talk about, you had this in your column for The Athletic today, is some of these extensions are not exactly what is first broken on Twitter. But yeah, give me your best rookie extension and your worst rookie extension from the team side perspective.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty clear best and worst. The best one is OG Anunoby's deal with Toronto. 4 years, $72 million, fourth year player option. The $16 million that he starts at next year is really at the absolute limit of what Toronto could pay him and still keep their cap room dreams sort of alive. So I thought that was really good for the Raptors there. They obviously had to give up the fourth year player option, but I think I think Ananobi is a pretty good bet to outrun this contract over these first 3 years. And
in my opinion, if you just look at what he did in the playoffs last year, he's already worth more than this.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think if he became a restricted free agent a year from now, he was probably going to get that $20 million range deal. Maybe more. Maybe would have gotten, there's going to be some stupid money out there next year too, most likely. I thought this was a really good deal for Toronto. Even with the fourth-year player option, you have to give up something to get something. And I just really liked what they did there.
So one thing that, I don't know if I can call this a trend, but that I wanted to throw out there as a possible observation to you is, for whatever reason, I have some theories on why this is. There still is anchoring about when guys were drafted, whether it's a guy coming out of the second round who's been on basically a minimum contract the whole time, OG drafted in the 20s, Kyle Kuzma, Derek White, although I thought he'd got an okay deal from the Spurs. All of these, whether it's just anchoring from being a low pick, whether it's the fact that they haven't made that much money compared to guys, especially because we're starting in 2017 now, this is all new CBA where, the number one overall pick, someone like Markelle Fultz, is getting $10 million a year to start. These guys already have $30 million less taxes in the bank, whereas guys at the end of the round or the second round haven't gotten that big payday, that life-changing money yet. So for all those reasons, it seems like these guys kind of at the end of the round still end up feeling like, all right, I got to get something. I got to get that big payday. Whereas guys at the beginning of the round, like they've already gotten that. They feel like they have a little bit more negotiating leverage. And so they'll either not extend or they will be able to just hold out and have more internal leverage and get themselves a better deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you say that because there are three players who did not sign extensions, right? John Collins, Lauri Markkanen, Lonzo Ball. I guess Collins wasn't a high pick, but the other two guys were. And you wonder how much their draft position played into that, especially maybe in Markkanen's case, where it's still not crystal clear that he's actually a good NBA player. Like Lonzo, to me, like I would have extended him if I was New Orleans. I was surprised they didn't get a deal done. But
Rich Paul, some other guys did extend. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, there's a criticism of Rich Paul that he is not, that he kind of really negotiates too hard and doesn't take the bag for the player when it's important. But sometimes he does, like in Ananobi's case, he did. Lonzo, I think, just being the number two overall pick, maybe that had too much anchoring for him. I'd love to know, because Lonzo's a tough player to value as well. I'd love to know what each side's offers were on that one. Zach Collins is another one who didn't extend.
Did not extend. And I think
Patton didn't extend. Sorry.
I think there were extenuating circumstances with Collins because extending him would have put Portland into next year's tax. So I think they just kind of want to wait. I do think Portland is probably about as bullish now as they were when they drafted him, even though maybe they shouldn't be, but they are. So I think there's actually anchoring from both sides, I guess, in the Portland deal, but they just didn't want to do a deal yet.
Yeah, it seemed like it was amicable. Mike Scotto did both sides have decided that because of his injury issues that it doesn't make sense to do a deal now, which is honestly probably correct from both sides. If you're Portland, you shouldn't be offering much more than $10 million a year, I would say, for someone like Collins. Yeah. And then the others that didn't extend, Josh Hart did not extend. Jared Allen did not extend as well. I think those are the only other.
Those are probably the main two. Yeah. Josh Hart is interesting to me because he's a good player. I'm not sure he totally fits where he is right now. I think he could be better on another team. Like if I'm one of the other teams in the league, I'm definitely looking at him and saying, if I come up with like $12 million next summer, I think New Orleans might flinch and I can get this guy.
Okay. So Ben, anything else you want to say on Ananobi as the potential best one? I mean, the player option, that was something that Woj noted this, and I was shocked to realize this. I'm sure this came from the agent, but Kuzma and OG Ananobi, that these are the first rookie extensions to have player options that weren't the max that was shocking to me. If that's really true, I can't remember any off the top of my head, so I think it is. But that was really surprising to me.
I'm trying to remember others from the past that were set up this way.
It's a structure that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Because Jeff Green had it, but that wasn't a player option. That was he went all the way to restricted free agency and then signed. Yeah, it is a structure that makes some sense, right? Yeah. So it is a little surprising we haven't seen it before. Speaking of Kyle Kuzma, so we nominated our best extension. I think Kuzma gets my vote for the worst extension.
Wow.
Why? Like, you took away all your trade, or took away a lot of your trade possibilities for this year to improve your team to, what, give $13 million to LeBron's backup? And he's like, is he good? Is he ever going to be good?
Well, on this team, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Maybe there's hope that, you know, if he can evolve into what he is supposed to be, which is like really a legitimate high scoring sixth man who can maybe close some games. I thought he did take some strides forward defensively in the bubble, although he got absolutely flambéed last night by Paul George.
Yeah. They actually pulled him in stretches, it looked like, to put in Horton Tucker, actually.
Yeah,
now he ended up playing 27 minutes, but a lot of that was at the end when the game was out of reach.
Yeah, but no, he hasn't found a way to score efficiently outside of some of those mid-post ISOs that had him averaging 18 a game in the era before Anthony Davis actually made this team good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's still some anchoring for that, obviously. I agree. I think he would just have more value on another, you know, a team like Orlando or something that struggles to score. And maybe that was a concern that they were going to lose him, and this maintains him as a trade asset. He's will be under contract through age 28, making $13 million a year, even if he does go for that player option. You know, I think for him it was a very good structure to do it that way.
Clearly, yeah.
But I mean, I think they at least they didn't do $16 million a year, I guess, right? I mean, they paid him like a high quality backup, and you know, I think he's at least shown the ability to score like that kind of a player. It's just when you have these superstars that like slightly below league average efficiency, high volume forward scoring, and not a ton else doesn't do much for you for the Lakers. It might for another team. There wasn't much opportunity for cost from a cap space perspective going forward. So really the only opportunity cost is not being able to trade him this year. But there are teams that trade
exceptions. There is an opportunity cost going forward if they want to use their full mid-level exception next year.
Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. Although I think they kind of see them, you know, they might re-sign someone like Harrell. They're going to re-sign
Caruso,
Schroeder.
Horton Tucker, Schroeder. Yeah, there's a lot of guys.
I mean,
there.
I think they intend to re-sign those guys. And if you do that, you're probably running out of room for the full mid-level pretty quickly, I think. Also, the LA Lakers are able to sign Wes Matthews and Marc Gasol for a combined $5 million a year. So not having the full mid-level level, I think, is a little bit less of an opportunity cost for them than some teams. I don't know. I didn't think it was bad. It made sense to me. The trade thing is the biggest one, but there's not the from a poison pill, especially he'll start at what, like $11 million or something? So it's 13. Not that big of a difference between the 3.5 he's making this year and the $11 million, or I guess it'll be the average over the life of the contract. And this year ends up to be about $11 million. So which will be his outgoing cap number in the poison pill. So if you make the trade big enough, you might still be able to get it done to trade him. Or if there's a team that has a trade exception, they can just take him as well. So it's not totally foreclosed, but I agree. I mean, for the trade purpose, I would have wanted to not extend him. I think they just felt like it was too good of a deal to not do it. But I think we disagree on the quality of the player.
Yeah, yeah. I just think sort of inside that LA bubble where it's like, you know, he was their guy that they got with a late pick and they got a lot of credit for it right away. And he's kind of seen as a star, even though he's not. And I just think all that colors it. So yeah, anyway, I was not a fan of that one.
If you're looking for new glasses, or even if you didn't think you were, I highly encourage you to check out Coastal.com. It's the perfect technological solution to our current socially distanced lifestyles. They have the most advanced visual try-on technology that you will find anywhere. You just select the frames, and it will put it on your face, on your computer, using your camera in an incredibly realistic looking way. You move your head around, you turn from side to side, it keeps them on there. It's really, really impressive stuff. So now you have hundreds of styles, in fact, over 2,000 frames that you can choose from. They have 24-hour customer support as well. They have America's best customer service, according to Newsweek. So you don't have to spend all this time at the store. You don't have to worry about keeping your distance from the employees at the store. You can try on everything virtually, and their prescription glasses start at a mere $9 with free shipping and 30-day risk-free returns. You can even check out how these will look if they're sunglasses using their technology as well. And when you buy a pair from Coastal, you can donate a pair to someone in need in just one click at no extra cost. To date, they have given more than 470,000 pairs of glasses to people in need across the world. They start at just $9. There's no need to leave your house. This is a new way to shop for glasses at Coastal.com. Use your FSA benefits now before they run out. Now and for a limited time, they are offering our listeners the best deal they have going anywhere. 50% off your first pair of glasses at Coastal.com/PER. Easy to remember, /PER, because John invented it. That's free shipping, 30-day risk-free returns, and 50% off at Coastal.com/PER. Only for a limited time. That's Coastal, Coastal.com/PER. Some restrictions apply.
David Harrison here, the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast, celebrating with you a 21-grain salute to a less boring sandwich thanks to Dave's Killer Bread. I don't know about you guys, but when I eat pizza, I eat it for the toppings, not the crust. And when I eat a sandwich, it's for what's inside the bread, not for the bread. But when I throw a sandwich on 21 whole grains and seeds, thin sliced bread from Dave's Killer Bread, it is the epitome of addition by subtraction. That thin sliced bread lets me focus on what's inside the sandwich, but also adds to the sandwich with killer taste, killer texture, killer nutrition, a subtle sweetness, and a seed-coated crust. Dave's Killer Bread is America's number one organic bread for a reason. It tastes so stinking good. Dave's Killer Bread is made with the highest quality organic and non-GMO ingredients and is power-packed with whole grains, fiber, and protein. Visit DavesKillerBread.com to learn more and look for Dave's Killer Bread in the bread aisle of your local grocery store.
So let's see here. We should go through the rest of them. And yeah, some of these have a lot of interesting provisions in them. Let's start with Jonathan Isaac, which was reported as 4 years at $20 million a year, 4 years, $80
million. Yep.
But that one, I would assume, has some protections for the Magic.
Yes. So it's $17.4 million in base salary a year, and then $2.6 million he gets if he plays 70 games or the prorated equivalent. So it's basically an injury protection for the Magic. And then the interesting part is that it also has something called an Exhibit 3, which basically allows a team to reduce or eliminate salary protection for a given body part. And we don't know what the fine print is on it, but we know that it exists in this contract. So that's the information we have right now. And so you would presume it's for his left knee, right? Which would provide a little bit extra security for the Magic in case something additional happened to that knee that caused him to be unable to play.
Yeah. Now, those kind of look better on paper for the team sometimes than they actually are. Like Joel Embiid had one of those, I think one for his knee and one for his foot, if memory serves.
It was a different kind. It wasn't an Exhibit 3. It was actually written into the contract guarantee provisions. But basically the same thing, although technically executed differently.
They had to decide earlier. So with this one, they probably won't then, right? Like it was like a year in advance, they would have had to decide to cut him essentially before it guaranteed. This was my recollection.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing that it doesn't protect you from as well is if the guy just has trouble with the body part and plays but sucks. It's more a situation where there's an actual re-injury.
Yeah. No, that's I mean, if he's just going out with a 97-pound knee brace and can't move, but he's still playing in games, that's an issue. So it's basically $17 million a year, and then there are incentives for games played, but then there's also the Exhibit 3. Does that cover it?
Yeah, exactly. So it ends up at $20 million a year, and it's flat. The money's flat. So I actually like this deal for Orlando. I think Jonathan Isaac can be really good.
Yeah, I think, you know, in isolation, it makes sense to me. The whole point of extending to me is you feel like the player has a chance to outperform this contract. And I believe that is the case for Isaac.
Exactly. So I think that one is a clear win for the Magic.
Now, how about Markelle Fultz? I think there's Josh Robbins, your colleague at The Athletic, reported a team option on the end of the three-year, $50 million extension that he signed.
Yeah, so it's actually a $2 million guarantee on the third year.
Okay.
So he gets 16 and a half the first 2 years, and there's a $1 million incentive if he wins the Most Improved Player Award, which is an interesting one, right?
I mean, I'll tell you what, if he ever like gets his jumper back, which is looking kind of unlikely to me, then I think that's actually not totally unrealistic. It'll be such a great story, and like there really will be an improvement. So, but my issue with this one is, the team is protected. It makes more sense. There probably isn't too much opportunity cost. They were already going to be, they weren't going to have cap room for next year for sure. And then the year after that, you know, they might have had some cap room, but, you know, what does it matter, I guess, for a team like Orlando at this point? It's not going to go out too far. So you might have a couple of years of him not being worth the salary. I suspect that will be the case just because the jumper still has not improved at any sort of a rate where you think it's going to get to be a weapon again. You know, I was disappointed with him coming back to the bubble, and I've been disappointed this year that it just looks like the same form that it's been.
Yeah. So obviously they basically overpaid for these next 2 years to have the option on the third year is how I look at it. I don't think it was necessarily a bad gamble in their position, but I'm much more close to straddling the fence on this one than what, like, I'm a big fan of the deal they did with Isaac. I'm more on the fence with this one.
Yeah, I mean, is it going to be awkward when Cole Anthony is better than him? I mean, I say that in somewhat jest, but I think that actually there is a reasonable possibility of that. But yeah, you know, I like Fultz. He defends. I know, like, the guards who defend. But yeah, it's hard for me to see without the jump shot. Like, maybe he could come close to living up to this, but you know, I think you pay this type of money for a guy who's a top 20 point guard in the NBA, and I just don't see how he gets there with the jump shot limitations. Like, he's kind of like DeLon Wright otherwise, you know?
Yeah, that might be a good comp. Like a really high level backup who's a little stretched as a starter, and maybe like fourth quarters isn't really your guy.
Yeah. Well, and also just when you just look at the overall fabric of their team, having a point guard who can't shoot when you also have a four man who can't shoot in Gordon, another four man who can't shoot in Isaac, and it just becomes very hard to build your team as well, I think. And that's just the overall thought in Orlando, is it just continues to be, all right, they're like, well, we got to lock these guys up because, you know, so we can keep winning 33 games a year or 41 games a year, whatever it ends up being, you know, depending on how Vucevic and Terrence Ross shoot it that year, and Evan Fournier, and those guys are all on the decline, and Fournier may not be here anymore. And so I'm just sort of like, you know, where are you going here? Like, you need to pick a direction at some
still point. Still waiting for that, like, push your chips in move from the Magic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can go all in and double up and still have the eighth highest stack at the table. You know, I mean, I think that's the analogy at this point, because they don't have that many chips to push in. I don't know anything about poker, but I did read Maria Konnikova's book a few weeks ago.
Brilliant.
This episode is brought to you by 1010. You may have read about it in the New York Times or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. And when they are gone, they are gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're making 2021 plans or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com.
What's up, sports fans? Matt Peck here, host of Locked On Bulls, and I want to talk to you really quickly about another excellent podcast. Huge Fan is a new SiriusXM original podcast where stars talk sports. Each week, join host LaChyna Robinson as she chats with your favorite celebs about childhood sports memories, game day rituals, the most heated rivalries, and more. And this new season features huge names like Anthony Ramos from In the Heights and Hamilton, Pat Carney from the Black Keys, Mel C, that's right, a.k.a. Sporty Spice from the Spice Girls, and even actress Michelle Williams talking about her love for our very own Chicago Bulls. Huge Fan is a fresh way to connect with your favorite artists, actors, and personalities about something we all understand, fandom. Huge Fan is now out on Pandora, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow the show or subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode.
How about Derek White with the Spurs?
So here's the thing I'm questioning about this deal. First of all, let's go over the numbers, right? So yes. He's got he starts at $15.7 million base salary next year, goes up to $19.3 million in 2024, has $1.25 million in incentives each year, 500 of which are pretty easy for him to get, and 750 of which are going to be pretty difficult. So you could call the overall amount on this $72 million over 4 years. So it's Bogdanovich money.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily hate paying him at that level. Like, I think he's a pretty good player. Although, the first year of the contract is likely to be the most valuable because he's much older than most of the other extension candidates. So that's a little bit of a drag. The thing I just didn't get is why they didn't front load the money. Like, you have all this cap room next year, probably more than you can spend. Like, you got, even with his money on the books, you got $54 million or something next year. And so you're gonna start him low and then go up to paying him $19 million when he's 30? Like, I just don't get that.
Yeah, I would have liked to have done it that way as well. Perhaps agents are less interested in that kind of a structure because you're going to have these big escrow amounts taken out over the next 3 years, probably. So where even the losses from this year, where revenue could be down as much as 30 or 40%, that's going to get spread out over the next 3 years. You could have 18% escrow the next 3 years. So maybe they felt like they wanted to push more of that money towards the end of the contract for that reason. That's the only reason I could think of, or just that they're not really that creative, or maybe they got big cap space aspirations for next year.
It could be, it makes me, yeah. I hope there's something there, and I hope the vision there isn't like, well, let's just bring back Aldridge and DeRozan again, run it back.
Yeah. Well, also, I think there's going to be a new TV deal probably at the end of the 24 season. So maybe that makes the pain on the end a little bit less. And so you just feel like it's better to keep it low now when we're in this flat cap period. But I like this one for the Spurs. This is another one where White hasn't made any money. If he had taken it into restricted free agency after a good year, I could have seen him getting Malcolm Brogdon money. But this isn't really that far off of that. I think this is kind of the reasonable discount for getting paid now and locking it in, whether if the market would have been set by guys like Brogdon and Van Vliet for what he could be if he really does well. So you take a discount off of that. I mean, I think the player that we saw in the bubble is worth a little bit more than this, but that was 8 games. He's coming off this toe injury. He hasn't made any money in his career. So I thought this is a pretty fair deal for both sides. And of course, the Spurs, as you mentioned, have cap room coming out their ears in the future. So try and lock him up. But I think he could outperform this by a little bit.
I think he could outperform it by maybe a little bit, but it's definitely toward the higher end of what he can be. And I think there's some potential for downside surprises on the last couple of years of this.
Just due to the age. I mean, so he's going to be 26. Yeah. He's 26 now.
He's already 26 and not quite like an elite skill guy. So
Yeah. He still will be 26 this offseason. As I delete him from my sheet of restricted free agents. Sadly, man, the teams with cap room in 2021 are looking like some big losers over the last month. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But one last thing on White, though.
Mm-hmm.
While he may not be that amazing of a player, though I think he's very good, and defensively with his help defense and charges, you know, that's very underrated ability to guard both guard spots really well, shoot it, run pick and roll. That level of versatility means that, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're not, you know, in a vacuum that valuable of a player, but you're going to have a lot of suitors when you're that type of player because he fits on every team. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think we've seen guys like Van Vliet was one of those guys this year, for example, as compared to say a point guard like Ricky Rubio, where yeah, you know, teams with a huge hole at the position would be interested in him, but White, you know, if you have a hole at the two, you have a hole at the one, he can run some pick and roll, so like you might believe he can become more of an offensive star, or maybe you already have a ball dominant wing that he's a perfect fit next to. So, you know, there's 15-20 teams in the league that could use Derek White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point, and they preserve the asset value and have it to use in a trade this coming year.
Kennard, Luke Kennard. This was a pretty good example of Twitter deal inflation when it was first announced at 4 for $64.
Yeah, so he can theoretically get to that amount, but he won't. Yeah, so there's $56 million in base salary and $8 million in incentives. Of the incentives, I'd say about $4 million are realistic and $4 million are not so realistic. And the other thing is that there's a fourth year team option. So what did the Clippers really commit themselves to? About $41 to $44 million. You know, he's got a games played incentive. He's got an incentive for making the first round of the playoffs. So he should get those and get about $1 million in incentives that way.
Yeah. Well, and obviously now with all these unlikely incentives against the hard cap, the Bucks will be really interested in trading for him as well. So that's
right. And then finding out later, like, wait. So I actually thought this deal was okay. I think Kennard's a pretty good offensive player. Still pretty young. Obviously this depends a little bit on his knees, but I don't know. I thought he looked pretty decent last night. And this league pays more for offense and for shooting, and that's just the way it operates. And so I think there was certainly there was a real threat of Kennard getting this contract or more next summer.
Yeah, so this was one where it was pretty close to what I ended up negotiating in our mock offseason episode with Dan Feldman. We ended up at 4 for $48 with the last year non-guaranteed, but could guarantee based on games played because he had that bilateral knee soreness that caused him to miss the majority of last year. You know, he didn't have surgery, so that's a little concerning. Yes, we pay for shooting, but he's not, you know, that kind of pure J.J. Redick or Joe Harris type of shooter. And Harris, of course, has more size. Bertans has more size. You know, he's not that like devastating come off a screens guy. Maybe he'll become that, but he kind of wants to do more with the ball. And I think it's funny to me that the Clippers traded for him and paid him, because to me, he would have much more value for the team that he just left, Detroit, where they just desperately need some offense. And it doesn't matter that he's not going to be able to guard anyone in the playoffs. And that does matter for the Clippers. You know, I could see him being a very limited rotation piece in the playoffs. And so I do kind of question paying him now, but you don't trade for him to not pay him. And so I think this is probably the lowest deal that anyone like him who is kind of views themselves as a starter and has shown enough to kind of be a starter. This is the lowest deal that anyone like that is going to accept realistically in a rookie extension.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if there's ever been a rookie extension done for the mid-level or less other than the one we did with Quincy Pondexter.
Jeremy Lamb did one in Charlotte.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Now that might have been technically the mid-level was a little bit lower at that time. Like that might have been the year that the mid-level was artificially low still.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the ones that, and Lamb had shown nothing, don't forget, at the time of that trade, right? Like that was just a pure flyer. 3 years, $21 million with Charlotte after he got traded from, you know, I think that would have been 2015. So everyone knew that the big cap spike was coming at that point and that it would be, you know, below the average salary. But you're right. I mean, there's just, and frankly, I think that more teams and players, I think we started seeing that a little bit with guys like Kuzma, for example, where, you know, you should get that money for your client, even if he's not being paid at, like, you know, a pure starter type of level. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times guys turn down contracts that they, and then they go into restricted free agency and they're kind of, you know, they just get paid like backups for the rest of your career. And so if you can kind of get that hybrid starter backup money in an extension when you're not a clear starter, probably makes sense to take it.
Yeah, I think so. Get that, especially on your coming off your rookie deal. Get that life-changing money.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar. No longer must you make do with a protein bar that tastes like a small child took a bunch of sand from the beach, put it in a wrapper, and tried to pass it off as food. The flavors of Built Bar are amazing. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake. Those are the new ones. The classics like raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie. All these bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, but still fantastic nutritional value as well. Peanut butter, for example, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. And you can even get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON, the name of this network, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, did we hit all of them? Am I forgetting any?
Do we need to talk about Rudy Gobert?
I went on this for a long time with Danny, but yeah, I would love to get your thoughts on it.
So I was not a fan of this. I thought they completely overpaid. I thought going out 5 years was a mistake. I thought between the Mitchell deal and this one, they kind of gave in on both of them. And as a result, they really are going to have their hands tied going forward with a kind of a decently good team that is old and expensive and will be probably trending downward unless Mitchell just goes bananas.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. You know, I mean, I think I might just like go to one of those quick like data scientist boot camps, put on a purple shirt and walk into Ryan Smith's office and demand $2 million a year. I'll probably get it.
I mean, he showed he's willing to spend. So that's the kernel of good news in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's the better new owner disease than the Tillman Fertitta one.
Yeah.
But it is a new owner disease to like want to prove your commitment. The fact that he was a fan of the team, I mean, that's just that.
Yeah. This all feels very fanboy, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure Jazz fans are really happy that Rudy Gobert is going to be sticking around, but you just had to negotiate a little bit harder. I mean, the most he was going to get from another team, even as a free agent, was $150 million. And, you know, I think Gobert really benefited from kind of his pridefulness and his prickliness, ironically enough, to where he could realistically make the threat of like, hey, you know what? Even if you offer me $30 million more than anyone else could next summer, I'm going to say, fuck you, because you had the chance to pay me, you didn't. And I'm going to just leave because I've already gotten $100 million. But yeah, I mean, if the Utah Jazz lose in the first round this and they're locked into this team of all old guys except for...
They're already a tax team next year, and especially if Mitchell makes third team All-NBA. I mean, they gave him 30% of the max if he even makes third team, which, like, Sacramento didn't do that with Fox. Miami didn't do that with Bam. And so it could put them several million into the tax. That's before you re-sign Mike Conley or add a draft pick or, you know, sign anyone else. I mean, they're just really put themselves in a tight spot.
Okay, let's get into the mailbag here.
Sure.
And this is a good one. Daniel Holland, Dutchie 1515. What teams have impressed you the most in preseason and which have concerns based on what you have seen?
I try not to take too much away from preseason. I will say, since we talked about Minnesota before, they did not look good in preseason. And they made a bad situation worse, I thought, by cutting Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who was the guy I thought they should end up starting at four.
I thought he actually looked semi-okay in what little I saw there. But
yeah. And no, I thought he was one of their best players in the preseason, like without a doubt. And
a chilling vision of things to come.
Yeah, it was. Anthony Edwards, I think in the first half of the season, certainly temper expectations. Whatever he's going to become, I think it's just going to be a little bit of a while, just because his feel is so far behind.
Looks heavy to me too.
Could be, yeah. I mean, he's got that linebacker body, but I gotta watch that a little more closely.
I mean, I thought he looked heavier than he did in college. I guess I'll put it that way, and not in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, definitely worried about Minnesota. I think it's probably fair to worry about Golden State after last night. Although I know they didn't have Draymond Green. Green and they were playing on the road against a good team.
And they're not going to shoot that poorly from three. I mean, they're like, I think you can count on Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins to hit 33% this year instead of 1%.
Yeah.
and even Steph Curry was only 2 out of 8. You know, I think they, they really missed Draymond Green as a passer and connector. I thought Golden State looked fine in the preseason, you know, so granted that's preseason. Atlanta, some concerns there. And now it's particularly with some of the injuries that they have going into this season. Clint Capella is not going to play tonight. Okongwu is still out. Chris Dunn is still out. They're right back to this problem of no point guard depth and no center like they had last year.
Well, I mean, I don't know that Rondo being out hurts them.
Well, it hurts them when they don't have anyone. Game. It hurts them when they don't have any backup. I mean, you think Brandon Goodwin is better than him?
Okay, so I'm a Brandon Goodwin stan.
Yeah, but, no, I realized as soon as I asked that, you were going to say yes.
Yeah. So it is interesting, though. I mean, in the last preseason game, they were trying to play Herter as a backup point guard, and it was like they couldn't even run any offense. Yeah.
It's got to be Bogdan.
It's got to be Bogdanovich. They have to tilt the minutes so that early sub out Bogdanovich, and then he comes in when Trey comes out. I think that's what you need to do. I mean, especially like you don't even have Chris Dunn right now. Not having the bigs is a problem because, I mean, to not have both centers, like you can get by some of the game with John Collins there, but like there's going to be a lot of Bruno Fernando happening, and that might not be pretty. So... But there was some encouraging stuff with the Hawks kind of beneath all that. Like DeAndre Hunter had a good preseason, and that was the one position where you really scratch your head and wondered what the Hawks were going
to
get.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if he can continue that. I mean, two teams we don't have to spend a lot of time on, Chicago, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter. Markkanen did not extend despite Casey Johnson reporting that he really wanted to and was willing to make some concessions. It seems like they just, you know, the ball's just got to go in the basket for him, number one. I mean, there's all this stuff about how he was being used by Jim Boylan and all that, and it's like, well, make more than 34% of your three-pointers first, and then we'll talk about doing all this other shit.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And
yeah, and Wise, like, I think that's the right move for Karnišević. Like, you're new there. Like, let's see what we have first.
Yeah. And, you know, it's still restricted free agency. Like, they still will have a chance to retain him, and they'll still even have a chance to retain him with a contract offer that kind of before he really gets out there and gets an opportunity. And Wendell Carter Jr., the early three-point experiment with him. I think he was 1 of 16 from three in the preseason, and you know,
it looked like 1 of 16. You know what I mean? Like,
although I mean, the long term, Patrick Williams looked good. If he can seize the starting small forward job, that'll be nice. But I don't expect him to really contribute a ton this year. And then Thomas Satoransky is working his way back in after having to self isolate for 10 days because of Noah Vonleh and. Mm-hmm. Luke Kornet, Daniel Gafford at backup big. Thaddeus Young has missed all the preseason with this infection. So they got a lot of holes again, it seems like. Garrett Temple also missed all preseason, basically. You know, I thought Levine and White actually looked pretty good, but Williams, but everyone else, not so good. Chandler Hutchinson showed a little bit, but, you know, I'd like him to be able to hit a three-pointer still. You know, I'm not sure that I believe in that yet. Detroit's, you know, Blake Griffin, I know you were impressed with him at the beginning of the first game. That kind of dropped off a little bit. And the Jeremy Grant shoot a bunch of 20-footers off the pick and roll didn't go too well.
Yeah. You know, what Blake gives them just being on the court at all is just a level of skill that they just don't have otherwise. True. But there's going to be a lot of growing pains with Killian Hayes this year, I think.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
I mean, they might be the good kind of growing pains, but they're still going to hurt this year.
Yeah, I mean, he had like 24% turnovers in the German league last year.
Yeah, yeah. So that whole thing is just going to be very much a work in progress. You know, Josh Jackson, from what I saw, like he was really good in one game, but then kind of the same sort of hot mess playing style. Like I don't have a lot of faith in that one, I guess. So, well, you know, I don't think Detroit should have had high hopes going into this year. The team I'm getting a little interested in that could be like slightly frisky is Cleveland. Like what I've seen from Okoro so far, like what I've seen from Dylan Windler, I think he might get a chance to play some here, depending on what else is going on with their bigs. Andre Drummond has actually looked really good. Like, they might be less bad than we thought.
Well, and honestly, Kevin Love, while the idea of him to space the floor for the young guards is a good one, he's going to miss the beginning of the season with this calf issue and hasn't played much in preseason or at all, I think. But, you know, Larry Nance, I think, can give them, he might be a better player for them at this point just to get their defense competent. If you have Okoro and Nance and Drummond, all of a sudden, maybe your defense isn't going to be a complete disaster anymore. And they're struggling to score even with Kevin Love, so... that's an interesting one, and you know, I have them winning 0.5 games more than their 22.5 over under, so I hope that you are correct.
Way to go out on a limb.
Let's see here. I mean, Memphis looked really good. Ja looked awesome, but of course they played against Atlanta and Minnesota, so take that all with a grain of salt.
The shooting deficit in Memphis, I still worry about with Jaren out, especially at the beginning of the season. That's going to be a hard thing for them.
Yeah, people have been focusing on Portland not looking good a bunch, but I mean, they're veteran enough.
They got their asses kicked by Denver. I mean, that was
Lillard didn't play
rough
in that game though, right?
What's that?
Didn't Lillard not play in that game?
Not in the second one, but he played in the first one, and it was just as bad.
I thought Jokic continuing to look skinny was a good sign for Denver. All right, you want to pick a question here?
Yeah. All right. Here's an interesting one. Who's an under the, this from David Lockheed. Who's an under the radar player that can blossom if traded to the right team? And he uses an example, TJ Warren going to the Pacers.
That is an interesting one. I mean, there are kind of, I think there's two sort of archetypes of these players. One is a really good offensive player who just hasn't had as many opportunities, whether in his role or his playing time. And then the other one is a player who is kind of, you know, a 3-and-D type, good role player, but the team isn't good enough for him to play a role around some stars. And so, you know, Warren falls into that category a little bit more, I think. Anyone come to mind for you? I got a couple, but I'll let you go first.
Spencer Dinwiddie?
Yep, he was going to be my first one as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a lead guard on maybe a 40-win team, like I think he could do a lot of damage.
Yeah. If D'Angelo Russell could make the All-Star team in the East, I think Dinwiddie is better than D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, that's a good comparison then. Yeah. What about Troy Brown?
Yeah, that's an interesting one where, you know, he really needs to be a two, kind of a ball handling two. You know, I think he could work better in a multiple ball handler system. He's been miscast as a 3-and-D type of small forward is really what he's needed to play more for Washington. Now, how good is the on-ball stuff? How many teams can really use that? I guess we'll find out maybe a little bit this year. How about Mitchell Robinson?
Yeah, that
is he just,
you know,
too much of a head case?
That that six foul rule is still going to be there, right?
It's a concern.
It's a concern. I watched the Knicks a couple times in preseason, and he's you would be hard pressed to say he is improved.
Yeah, but I mean, we've never seen him actually play spread pick and roll on offense. I mean, his ability to go up and get alley-oops, I mean, there just hasn't been any space to do that. Their point guards have been the worst in the NBA for the past decade, so they got nobody to get him the ball. And, you know, I think the real question is, would he be better defensively somewhere else? And, you know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think Tom Thibodeau at least is someone who's, we'll find out still if whether Mitchell Robinson could be good defensively with Tom Thibodeau. Tom Thibodeau will, I still trust him to some degree as a defensive coach, even though it didn't go
well.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And the Knicks have looked, you know, more like a real basketball team in these preseason games.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my guy, Paul Watson, who only got $350,000 guaranteed over 2 years has got to be in there. We don't need to talk more about him. He's been a frequent mention on this program, to be sure. Gary Trent Jr. is another one. I think he's a starting two guard the way he played in the bubble.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if Portland's even going to have him be sixth or seventh in minutes. Like, it seemed a little too wedded to the idea that, like, Carmelo Anthony is, oh, he's coming off the bench, but he's our sixth man and not, you know, when he's really like their 10th best player.
Yeah. Not a big fan of that one. Let's see. Yeah. That's a pretty good list there. I would say, I mean, I would, there's some guys in New Orleans maybe as well. You know, we'll see how much Nikhil Alexander Walker plays this year. You know,
I'm still a big fan of his.
Good.
Even though he was bad last year. Yeah. I could definitely see like another team liberating him and putting him into a role and him succeeding.
How about Aaron Holiday?
Yeah, He's all right. Could he go somewhere else and start and maybe be like the 19th best point guard in the league in a new place? Maybe I could see that. But
I mean,
I have trouble like getting excited about, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's excited is tough. That's but you know, someone who could be better in a different role.
Oh, perhaps. So my Paul Watson would be John Conchar, who's going to be the fifth string shooting guard in Memphis this year.
I disagree with you on him because, like, didn't you write, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't you write that he can shoot? I haven't really seen him be able to shoot.
No, the shooting is the biggest question mark. Okay. I mean, he's a plus rebounder. He's a good passer. I think he's just like a good instinctive player.
Great finisher for his size.
Yeah, the shooting comes and goes with him.
Michael Mulder, Golden State, gonna have a bigger role this year. All right, let's move on. You want to pick another one here?
Yeah, sure. All right. Matt Conway asks, hey guys, what acquisitions around the margins, like an inexpensive role player type, do you think will have the most impact this year?
Could we put Derek Jones Jr. in that category? Is he an inexpensive role player type? It's 2 years of the mid-level?
Yeah, I mean, that's close.
Paul Watson, Michael Mulder?
Sorry, Paul Watson, sorry, Paul just, Watson, Michael Mulder.
Just shocked me, just shocked me.
I mean, Mo Harkless could. I just don't know that he will.
Yeah,
he'll definitely have the opportunity to be that guy.
Yes, that is true.
I just don't know if he's good enough to actually do it. Marc Gasol, obviously, kind of the same situation.
So a lot of guys on the Celtics who are going to have the opportunity. We'll see whether they can deliver or not.
Yeah, that Boston bench has me worried.
Damian Dotson, I don't know how much he's going to play, but he was one that I really liked as an inexpensive pickup in Cleveland.
I liked that move too. Yeah. Jeff Green, did you notice they played Jeff Green at five last night in Brooklyn?
Loved it. I mean, I assumed that was going to be their closing lineup. Like, they usually, teams at the end of the first half will play what they think their closing lineup will be. And I thought he looked pretty spry still. I mean, he's kept himself in pretty darn good shape to be playing as athletically as he is at age 34.
I mean, that was the weird thing, right? Like, because we had him in Memphis and he would, like, he's one of those guys, Justin Holiday's another one, I guess, who's just kind of indestructible. Like, they can play an 82-game season and at the end of it be pretty much fine. It's not just a question of, like, the games played. It's like they're never even on the injury report, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know my guy Jay Michael is big on Edmund Sumner in Indiana, another guy who might not play that much, but it has a good defensive skill set at least and can get out in transition and finish. The shooting's a question for him.
The decision making too. I mean, even beyond the shooting. Yeah, I think he's gotten an uphill battle. He's got some health questions too, but even if he... I'll give you a guy, Jayshon Tate in Houston.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I thought he was a really good overseas pickup.
Assuming that they can field a team.
Yes.
I actually...
Well, there is that little problem going on, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know who his teammates are going to be this year, but I think he's going to turn out to be a pretty good pickup. He's on a 3-year minimum too.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't quite dug into this whole Harden contact tracing thing. I saw the report from Tim McMahon confirming finally what everyone knew, which was that he had COVID-19 before the bubble. But I went to bed at 2 o'clock last night, Pacific time. So I get up and we record this meal. I didn't have that much chance to catch up on the news. So forgive me if I'm a little bit out of date on the latest developments in that story. But all right, should we do another one here? Or you got
yeah,
any more?
Yeah. Let's do another one.
This is a good question. Let me find this one. Had a couple of questions. Andrew Lee had this one. There's Anders Wiss talked about it. Basically, the shortened training camp combined with the fact that the Delete 8, trademark John Hollinger, has been out for whatever it's been, 9 months. How does all that play into the start of the season? Who has advantages or disadvantages, just, you know, in terms of the types of team?
I do think the Delete 8 teams are probably at a little bit of a disadvantage. I think the teams who are at the most advantage are the teams that played but didn't necessarily go on a deep run. Because I also think going all the way to the finals and then having to restart so quickly, like the Lakers and Heat have to do, I think that puts them at a disadvantage too. But these teams that got to play 8 games or got to play 15 games with the first round, I think they probably feel like they're in pretty good shape right now.
Yeah, I do think that some of these Elite Eights have looked pretty dicey. You could throw the Hawks in there, the Wolves in there. And I think there's just, let's not forget too, that for large portions of this time, like, guys couldn't even come into the facility. And yeah. So I think it's, if you had some players where, hey, you know, maybe they're not the most amazing workers, but like they're still willing to come in and you can kind of get them on a program and like, you know, you can help those guys get better. It's really been much more up to the individual to be a self-starter and be motivated on some of these teams. You also just have some guys where it's like, maybe they haven't done that much. You haven't been able to monitor their injuries, kind of make sure, like there's reporting, for example, with Kemba Walker, where he was coming into the bubble, you know, he had this knee issue and then he had all this rest and like the rest didn't help him. You know, he needed to still be working with the team and, you know, be managing this condition even when he's not around, you know, I mean, he's not playing basketball games, just like sitting at home on the couch isn't enough to kind of manage some of these conditions. So those are some things that could come into play. But I think your comparison is a good one, right? If you watch Memphis playing the Hawks or the Wolves, Memphis looked way sharper than them, for example, when so, I think we kind of view those teams as being all relatively close to one another in terms of their talent level.
Yeah, and so the other piece of this is continuity too, though.
Yeah.
Where Memphis is bringing back basically their whole team, and some of these other teams made a lot of changes. So that continuity will be favored without any question.
Yeah, and Kevin Pelton has done some research on this showing that continuity for the first, you know, little bit of the season can matter. Maybe there'll be a longer period of that this year. But I think, you know, it's really just the guys who are the self-starters. Also, I think maybe you could say that veterans who just kind of have their routine, who aren't kind of just learning to be professionals, who frankly, you know, maybe they live out in the suburbs, they've got more access to training equipment, they've got more access to, you know, playing in a gym, they might even have like a gym in their house, for example, as opposed to, you know, a rookie or a second year guy. For example, the Warriors guys, a lot of them just live in like the apartments around Chase Center, right? And when the facility was
closed, the same thing, it was the same thing in Memphis. So it was hard for those guys. Yeah, absolutely. Whereas, you know, Mike Conley's got his home gym, right? So he's got a full court and he can just work out there.
Yeah. Bagels are good. We can take this one quickly. Do you think the empty arenas will play a factor in shooting percentage similar to the bubble? You know, I mean, teams shot incredibly well in the bubble, at least through the first round of the playoffs. And then that kind of dropped off, although perhaps because there were actually good defensive teams at that point. I think it's going to be more that offense is going to be down, because while much was made of the bubble being a lockout type of scenario, this is kind of really more similar to that, right? You've got new teams coming together, very short training camp. You've had a lot of COVID restrictions, stuff like that. You're not in the bubble where basketball is like the absolute only thing, even though guys are kind of supposed to be taking it pretty easy with respect to that, other than James Harden. So I think we're going to see a little bit rougher of an offensive environment, closer to kind of, I mean, not to these levels, but relative to where it's been in previous seasons, at the beginning of the year in particular, like we saw in 99 and 2012.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. The bubble was really a one of a kind thing, and now teams are traveling again and going to different arenas and doing all this stuff. And like you said, there are some obstacles in terms of how they're ramping up into this season. I think both those things combined will probably take the offense down a notch.
Okay, let's do a lightning round here. I'll pick one and answer it in 30 seconds, and then you do the same thing. I know we got a lot of questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can. We got like well over 100 questions here, so we got to pick up the pace in this last like 10 minutes or so that we have here. General NBA, this is a good one from Ediz. Which perennial non-playoff team would you like to take over for the next 5 years? And the answer to that is the New Orleans Pelicans for me. Either them or OKC, but the Pels in particular, because while they've done a great job of the asset accumulation, I think they haven't done a great job. I'd love to wind it back in time to before this offseason, or actually I'll say I'd love to wind it back in time to the like 4 days between the Jrue Holiday trade and the Steven Adams trade and get started there. But no, I mean, I think just to try to find the fit around Zion, which David Griffin, I just don't think has done a very good job. And we'll see. Maybe there'll be more of an alchemy with this group than we expect. And maybe Zion is just so good, he'll overcome all of that. But that would be my pick.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I would go New Orleans as well. Atlanta might be the only other one where you can make a case.
Yeah, but they have so many assets going forward, and I think they have the best asset of that group too.
Yeah.
Memphis would be fun as well because I love John Morant, but and because I've just always wanted to be John Hollinger since I first started reading him.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't be in charge. You'd be second in charge. So just remember that.
they're a little more impacted as far as what they can do. They kind of have their group together at this point. Another one would just be the New York Knicks, right? They're just such a sleeping giant at this point. They do have some assets going forward. They don't have any assets that are actually on the team. So
yeah. You if you come in as the owner, I think you have a better chance of succeeding.
Okay, pick one here. 30 seconds on the clock. That was a little longer than 30 seconds, but that was a fun one.
Two different Hawks questions from Andrew Brotherton and James Fitzgerald, both asking the same thing. What should they target in a potential John Collins trade?
Oh, yeah. Actually, let's spend a little more time on this. I want to... God, we're such fucking windbags. But... or at least I am. But yeah, this one deserves a little bit more because this is going to be a big question this year.
Yeah, to me, they're all set up to trade John Collins for a high-level wing if one becomes available. Like, is John Collins enough to get a Bradley Beal trade done? Or John Collins and some stuff?
Oof, I don't think it's anywhere close to the best offer. You know, if you're looking at a Warriors package or a Brooklyn Nets package. I don't think that they... I mean, you mentioned trading John Collins for a high-level wing. To me, it's more trading John Collins for a mid-level wing. I mean, that's just the wings are just more valuable. And John Collins, we know he can score and he can rebound, but the fit with him is very difficult. It's just really hard to build a good enough defense with him out there because he's going to struggle to defend either power position. So I think I believe that OG Anunoby is a more valuable player than John Collins if you're trying to win at the highest levels.
That's a fair argument. Yeah. Even though John Collins might get paid more money next year.
Yeah. And also that's because he's going to get to be a free agent and Anunoby. Let's not forget too, Anunoby basically has had two lost years out of the last five with the ACL and then the appendectomy and all the stuff that happened his second year. So I think there's a reason for him to want to grab that deal early on.
Who's the best player they could get with for John Collins, right? So you're basically saying like forget about the high level guys. Like you got to target more if there was like a 25-year-old version of Danny Green.
Right. No, exactly. I think that's sort of that's kind of the guy. And I mean, there aren't that many of those guys out there. There's a reason those guys are so valuable, right? What about
like your guy Derek White?
Yeah, that would be an interesting. It's just the thing is, right? If you're a good team, a playoff level of team, and hey, guess what? By the way, most of those really good 3-and-D type of players are on playoff level teams. They are part of what make those teams playoff level of teams.
Yeah.
Then you don't really want John Collins because of the questions about his ability to be a winning player at the highest level. So now, are there some teams that might just like be seduced by the points and rebounds? I was thinking maybe like
Mikal Bridges.
I wouldn't do it if I were Phoenix. I mean, they are like Collins is a terrible fit next to DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who is out there that maybe if Capella still struggles with injuries, they might want to trade him for like a better defensive center. That could be a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the other possibility is that, you could turn around and do something with Capella. If Okongwu comes in and is like, wow, this guy's really good, then I think it makes it more plausible that you could end up doing something with Capella and having Collins be like the guy who starts games at four, plays some backup five, but doesn't finish the game.
What about a package built around like Keldon Johnson and one of these other Spurs guards and then maybe throw in one of those Spurs vets?
Yeah, something like that. Okay, okay.
San Antonio has plenty of room to pay him. They like bigs.
Something like that. Yeah.
You could... I don't know if Lonnie Walker is the greatest fit in Atlanta, but we'll see. Or maybe Devin Vassell if he starts to play well. Maybe Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. Like I don't know. that might even be too much from San Antonio's perspective. I mean, because the thing is, like, as soon as these guys start to look really good, it's like, yeah, do we really want to trade them for not only John Collins, but John Collins making $25 million a year?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you might say in San Antonio, we're not a free agent destination market, so we might be okay doing that.
You know, you could.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And I was, I mean, I could see their new management being, you know, they haven't impressed that much. Yeah. All right. That's all I got here, though, at this point.
Okay.
All right. My turn here. I actually am going to choose one for 30 seconds. All right. This one's easy enough. Cal Vauden on Twitter says, Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart, who is the better player now and who has the highest ceiling? I think you'd probably have to go with DiVincenzo. I would consider Hart to have a higher ceiling because he just has a little bit more size, you know, probably the most ability to guard opposing wings. Although he might just be so small that maybe DiVincenzo, who I think can be elite as a 1-2 defender, is better, but his shooting is a little bit of a concern to me. I believe in Hart as a shooter. Brunson to me is just kind of backup point guard. He would be third on this list for me. What do you think?
I could argue for Brunson over Hart. DiVincenzo to me, I mean, I'm captain of the DiVincenzo fan club.
He's got the best, the best.
I think he has a chance to become an excellent player.
Yeah.
I think Josh Hart can be a good role player. He's a little older. He's probably going to top out at pretty much what he is right now. Brunson could still maybe get better, especially if he was on a team where he had more ball handling responsibility.
I don't know, man.
I agree with you that he's probably a backup. There might be something there beyond that.
Okay, your turn. Let's do like two more here.
Tim Boeheim asks, I'm guessing that's not his real name. Any hope for RJ Barrett based on preseason?
He looks to be shooting it a little bit better. The situation is going to be so bad, we still may not quite know the answer to it. Like, you know, he looks like he's taken some steps forward. It's just, what is hope? That he's going to be an all-star? No. That he could be like an okay starting two if you really need some creation? Maybe.
Yeah, that's more the most disappointing part isn't the shooting, it's the finishing. It's that he just doesn't have that high wire athleticism to do stuff at the rim that would make up for him being a shaky shooter.
Okay, you want to pick one more?
Yeah, sure. All right, so we got a bunch of Mavs fans asking what do they do now?
We could spend a little more time on this one. This is a good question.
Who should Mavs be targeting now that Giannis signed?
Josh Richardson and Tim Hardaway.
I mean, that might be the best they can do. Yeah,
re-signing their own free agents.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'd say that's definitely a good option. You know, they've crashed on these shores before in Dallas, and
yeah. Although they have a good team now, though. Like they had 34-year-old Dirk wasn't enough for a big free agent to come there and be really excited about being able to win. I mean, they actually have an awesome team now. That's why they're so disappointing. I wanted Giannis to go there, actually. I wanted to see what that team would look like, but that's obviously not going to happen.
You could drop a giant offer sheet on John Collins, I guess, which, you know, so much of this depends on what Porzingis does this year, not just in terms of how he plays, but how much he plays. Because I think the thinking right now is you'd probably like a big wing is the thing you'd like the most in Dallas. But that could change if Porzingis's knee issues and other health issues start really creeping up on him.
Yeah.
What about Kyle Lowry in Dallas?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Drew Holiday would be a really nice fit there too. Yeah. We'll see whether Holiday extends or not. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to extend if I were him. He's easily the best free agent on the market now.
Well, Kawhi's the best free agent, but Kawhi resigns with the Clippers.
Right, okay, yeah. Good point. You know, they could also kind of just go the PJ Tucker, just get a bunch of good vets in there route. But I think they're, you know, Josh Richardson, we'll see how he plays this year. I'm expecting him to have a big year, so they may just want to re-sign him and then just get one more kind of starter level of guy and you're done.
Yeah. I mean, they've definitely given themselves a lot of options because they also have the ability to package contracts in a trade too. Now, they don't have much in terms of draft capital, but they have players that are actually decent that they can put in trades. So that offsets that to some extent.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they could go the Mike Conley route, the Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, probably wants his own team.
Well, they tried to go the Mike Conley route 5 years ago. So yeah, I could definitely see them trying that.
Yeah, there's nobody else that's really, like, sticks out to me as being an unbelievable fit there. Lonzo Ball in restricted free agency? Yeah. If you're a good team, you can't do restricted free agency, though, unless you guarantee you're getting him by the sign-and-trade route, because the opportunity cost is too high. If you don't get him, then you're screwed.
Yeah, because you've lost Richardson and Hardaway, yep. Basically. Yeah.
Oh, right, well, this is fun. It's good to interact with everyone. We've got so many questions left. We might just do a mailbag again next week, too, because we got a lot of team-specific questions we didn't have a chance to get to. And it'll be fun to talk about it with a week of the regular season in our belt. You ready to watch 13 games tonight?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to try to watch as many of them as I can. There's no games tomorrow, and the weather here is supposed to suck. So I'm going to watch a couple tonight and then try to catch up all day tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, I know you like to go to, like, these outdoor strip clubs a lot. So it's going to be tough with the weather being bad. You just have to watch some games instead, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe I'll bring my iPad over there. We'll see.
All right. We will be back. Remember, our regular time now is going to be on Wednesdays. Usually we'll record at 10 Pacific. So should be out, around 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific or so every week now. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening and happy holidays to everyone as well.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.